This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And today we are kicking off 2018 right with a beautiful, beautiful cryptozoological miracle.
Okay, let's call it that.
Let's call it that. Little disclaimer right at the top. I'm sick. Jason, you sick?
I'm getting better.
He's getting better.
I'm on the down.
I'm getting worse. Yeah. So Jason asked me what I wanted from the store today, and I told him I want to stop feeling like I'm always about to fall over. So give us a little slack. We probably sound pretty terrible, but we really didn't want to miss the first week of the year. That being said, we are going to miss the second week of the year. For the first time since, I think, March, we're going to take a week off. We're just going to recuperate after the long holidays and set our heads straight for 2018. So, show this week, no show next week. Okay? Everybody good with it?
I mean, I guess.
I can't really hear if anybody's not, that works. Cool.
Jason? You can make one of those newfangled Twitter poll things.
Oh, that's true. I know how that's going to go, though.
Yeah, you're right.
Although, to be fair, people are so supportive. Like, whenever I say something like, this is what I need, people are like, do what you need. Even if it's a day late. Like, I mentioned how I was sick on Twitter, and everyone's like, I don't care if it's a day late. I don't care if it's 2 days late. I don't care. I told one guy, it'll be on time, but we're off next week. He's like, I don't care. That's fine. Whatever. It's a free show.
So yeah, I mean, that's fair.
We appreciate it.
All right. So the Twitterverse is agreeing with us.
Yes. Hello, Twitter. You're beautiful. Yeah, no, so it should be good. But yeah, we just wanted to bring 2018 in, kick it off good. Just a quick reminder before we get started here. Rob's show, Our Strange Skies, it did launch. It launched actually even a day early, so it launched on New Year's Eve instead of New Year's Day. So everybody go listen to that. His first episode's up right now. It's beautiful and wonderful. And we're like kitty corner in the charts. Right now. So, like, I don't know where we are. We're like 153 or something, and he's like 162. And so it starts a new line, and he's right there. So we need to get him right next to us on the charts. Okay. You hearing me, people?
We gotta be buddies.
This is the Dayquil talking. Oh, no. This is the Dayquil talking. Okay. Go listen to Rob's show. It's amazing. All right. Now, 2018 is going to have some good things for us.
Okay.
We've got at least one new show style that we've been talking about for a while that we're going to be doing, which is more of a biographical style where we're going to look at individuals as opposed to events. Jason actually had a really great idea for a new show style as well. Why don't you tell the people about that?
So I thought it'd be really fun if Sam tried to explain to me different conspiracies that I just don't understand.
I like that.
Because there are many, and they just don't make sense.
So, if you have any ideas for that, any ones that you'd like me to explain to Jason, tweet at us at Not Alone Pod or at Mighty Moit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mighty Moit. Mighty Moit. we'll put those on the list to do. But yeah, we're looking forward. 2018 is going to be a good year. We're going to take it easy. We're going to really just get back to our roots, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know where we are or where we've gone.
But talking about getting back to our roots, we are going to kick it off with, like I said, a beautiful cryptozoological miracle.
All right. You've piqued my interest. All right. I like me some cryptid.
This story is so interesting because if we take just one aspect here or one aspect there, there's certain logical explanations, but if we take the whole story, and we take it at face value and say, this is what these people saw. Absolutely nothing makes any sense.
So,
and
like
I enjoy that. It's like a buffet.
Yeah,
yes.
If you look at it all at once, just like, whoa,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on here,
you
man.
You feel a little bit sick.
Take one dish at a time, you can break it down a little.
Yes, but then once you've eaten all of the dishes, you throw up because it doesn't mix well. But it happened, you know, one way or the other. So let's get into it. Today we're going to be talking about, it's a lesser known one, I would say, the lesser known cryptid of the Van Meter Visitor. Now, the story of the Van Meter Visitor begins 114 years ago in 1903 in the small town of Van Meter, Iowa. The monster, the visitor, often referred to as a real-life gargoyle, terrorized the town for 3 days and three nights before its eventual disappearance. Now, at the time of the events, the town of Van Meter was composed of only about 1,000 people. It's a small place just west of Des Moines. Nowadays, 113 years later, it is still composed of only around 1,000 people. Its population has actually only increased by about 150 in the last 113 years. Now, it's fairly unremarkable. Apart from these events, which are obscure even in the realm of cryptozoology and the paranormal, not much of note has ever occurred in Van Meter.
So I'm assuming kind of that, like, sleepy Midwestern town that we kind of all have in our minds already.
Yes, exactly. Perfect. It's but to me it doesn't feel like, you know, you've got your sleepy Midwestern town or your sleepy Eastern town where something is bubbling under the surface, right? Like a Stephen King scenario. It doesn't feel like that. You know, like Dover. Remember how we talked about Dover?
Yeah.
Seems a little weird. This just does seem like a little place.
It's also the plot for Stranger Things season 3.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Really?
No.
We said it first, guys, dear listeners. I can't judge truth from lie right now. I'm all hopped up on cold medicine.
So many things I can do.
Don't be rude or weird either. Okay.
I meant like manipulate you.
Ah, that's fair.
No, you're okay.
However, if we take the multiple eyewitnesses' account that have come out of these events at their word, then there is something beyond remarkable that happened those days back in 1903, and it may be something completely unexplainable. Now, the first sighting was reported by Ulysses G. Griffith, a local tool and farm implement salesman who was returning home from a business trip around 1 a.m. on September the 29th. Now, it's unclear whether he was inside or outside, but one way or the other, he ended up seeing a light on top of a nearby rooftop. He was a bit confused as to what it was, as there were no streetlights or other sources of illumination that ought to have been there at the time or at all. As he stared, he started to formulate a theory that this was most likely a burglar, somebody who was about to burgle this place.
Hold on a second. It just sounds like the Jersey Devil took a three-day vacation.
And
he's on the rooftops. He just found a lantern.
You know, I tell you what, things on rooftops is like a trigger for me.
Yeah, it's
is the scariest thing
I
can imagine.
It's the turn of the 1900s. Everything's on rooftops.
It's
the Jersey Devil, and now our visitor here.
Rooftops are us. Yeah. So I just whenever anything's on a rooftop, it's automatically scarier to me. Anyway. He thinks, okay, somebody's probably just trying to break in here, and
from the roof? Is it
old
Saint
Nick? From the roof, yes. And he sits there staring for a moment, just to kind of get his wits about him, when suddenly this light, it jumps. And it doesn't jump from this rooftop to that rooftop and along the way. It jumps across the street in a bound that...
Whoa.
Yep.
Whoa.
And it lands on the opposing rooftop.
So, it flew across the street.
Yes.
Is really what we could probably say here.
Yes, it couldn't have... Well, depending on what creature we're looking at, maybe it could have jumped.
Maybe it's Superman. Able to leap over tall buildings.
1903. There was no Superman.
There was no Superman.
I'm pretty sure that
Man, can
Krypton
you
wasn't
a
even...
world without Superman?
Yeah, it's the world we live in now. There are no heroes. Kill your heroes.
Whoa, Sam.
Whoa. So it does. It jumps this impossible distance at an unreal speed. And Ulysses grabs his shotgun, which he takes with him everywhere. That's the nice thing about Van Meter, Iowa. Everybody's armed. Yeah, everyone has guns, and they're really not afraid to use them at all. Even irresponsibly so, I would say. He grabs his shotgun, and he fires at this light. Now, he wasn't sure if he had hit it or not, and he reckoned he must have missed due to it moving away unimpeded. He had no way to pursue it, and wasn't completely sure that what he had seen was actually happening, or real, to begin with. It's 1 a.m. He had a long, long day. He could have just been going kind of out of it. So he says, okay, I'm not going to report this. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to go to bed, and so be it. And he forgot all about it until the word of another sighting started circling around town.
Huh.
Now, the next night, again, around 1 a.m.
I saw that thing, too.
Yes, around 1 a.m., the light returned. This time, the light was directed into a home. It shone through the darkened bedroom window of the town doctor named Dr. Alcott, who believed that he was about to be burgled. Hardcore burgled. I just really love the word burgle.
Turn of the century burglars.
Everyone's like, is this just a normal thing for burglars to do? Just like case the joint? I guess so.
With a bright light at night?
With a bright light at 1 a.m. every time.
Yeah, it's always 1 a.m.
It's the witching hour. Exactly. Yes, whenever bad things happen, it's the witching hour, regardless of what time it is.
Truest fact, nothing good happens after midnight. That's why Cinderella ran away.
That's true. Except for those jack-in-the-box, like, munchy meals or whatever they call them. Those are pretty good.
They're good in the moment. They're not good looking back.
That's very, very true. There will be more developments as time goes on in the story, but first we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors. A fresh new year has begun, and if you're setting new goals for your business, it's extremely difficult to reach them without the right people on your team. ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding them. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites with just one click, and then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them, and they even review every application to identify the top candidates so that you never miss a great match. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. You can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs to ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. You just need to go to ZipRecruiter.com/alone. That's ZipRecruiter.com/alone. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/alone. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So yeah, he wakes up and he says, oh no, I'm about to be burgled. And he grabs his gun and... Again, everyone in this story has at least one gun. He heads outside to confront.
So is this one like a rifle or we...
I think this one's... No, it's a
six-shooter. Dirty
Harriet.
Okay. So
yeah,
like
it's
a
six-shooter.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a revolver.
Yep. Nice. And he...
I like this guy's style.
And he heads outside to confront this burglar who's casing the joint. However, what he comes face-to-face to could hardly be described as human, and most likely had interests far beyond petty theft. Now, what he saw, and it's important to remember, this is not... There's a lot of comparisons between the Van Meter Visitor and Mothman, and we'll get into that, of course. But this is not at a distance. He is, for all intents and purposes,
he opened the door,
staring this thing
right
in the frickin' face. And
that's terrifying.
Yep. What this frickin' face is something that he described as half human and half animal. He claims that the entity was taller than himself, most likely somewhere around 7 to 8 feet tall. It had a semi-humanoid face, but it was pointed with much more... of a beak.
Then he's got like a snout?
Yes, yeah. It's a beak more than it's a mouth and a nose. Now, it had large wings, much like bat wings, covered in a thin membrane, and a blunted horn growing out of its forehead. it was from this horn that the light was illuminating it, and it came out like a beam of light, not necessarily just a glow. And it came right out of his head. And this light was described by some who saw the creature as being as bright as an electric headlight. Now, at point blank range, the doctor fires 5 shots at the creature without even thinking. The creature is completely unfazed.
Just cool hand Luke hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
We both did the same.
Not a visual
motion.
Medium. He does. He fires 5 shots into the creature, and it just stands there. It doesn't respond. It doesn't make a noise. It doesn't fall. It doesn't even move away. And at this point, he's a little freaked out, obviously, and
yeah,
he
totally.
Just
that's terrifying.
Jumps back inside. When he peers out the window a few minutes later, the creature had vanished. The interesting thing about
it... So, did it have arms? Or just wings?
Well, good question.
That's what I am kind of lost on here. Is it just a face that's humanoid, or do we have, like, literally, like, a gargoyle-esque body here?
Typically, all of the reports of this, I remembered when we were talking about dragons, it lines up with that biology you were talking about, where to have 4 or more than 4 limbs, it would be something that had to come from a divergent ancestor and all of that. This thing does just have like wyvern hands,
okay,
right?
Gotcha.
Just talons.
Yeah. So it's
on
like
the...
a large bat.
Yeah, like a bat.
Cool. Okay, yeah. That's I just didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So one of the on that bat note.
But it was like completely naked? Like no hair or filaments?
Yeah, no,
like
it was like reptilian and leathery.
Okay.
Yeah. On that note, though, there's so the book that we did a lot of this research out of, and it is the best account for this, is a book called The Van Meter Visitor, A True and Mysterious Encounter with the Unknown, by a researcher named Chad Lewis. Now, in interviews that have been done with Lewis, he notes, and it's worth noting, that this took place in 1903. This was the time when they actually had just discovered the mountain gorilla. And it was a time when new big animals were still being discovered. And so people kind of thought, okay, it's a giant bat. So be it. Science finds something new every day. Why can't it be a giant bat? You know, it's 100 years later, we haven't seen anything like it. But at...
Yeah, most of our discoveries are pretty small now.
Yeah. At this point, though, everybody still thinks it's
as in the
just...
animals, not the discoveries. The discoveries are pretty big.
Right.
But they're small
the
creatures
animals
usually.
Are small, yeah. But at this point, everybody, that's kind of what's going around town. Like we said, Griffiths doesn't think anything more of it until he hears of this sighting by Alcott.
So they don't think anything of a giant
bat
prowling the streets
they
with
think
a
of
shining
it.
Horn?
They think of it, but they don't think of it in terms of, I mean, this story has gotten everything from UFO fever to it's a ghost, and we're going to talk about all that. But during the time they did, they just thought, oh, it must just be some kind of strange creature. And they did defend themselves. In fact, as we'll see, quite a few of the witnesses see it while defending things from it. But they weren't, I don't know, it wasn't as big of a panic, I would say, as...
And it took 5 to the chest without flinching.
Yeah, without flinching at all. Some people have said, well, potentially, perhaps, it... did unfurl its wings. We don't know for sure if it unfurled its wings or what during this. And maybe it shot it through the wing. And so it would still be standing there.
Right.
It wouldn't
be
able to fly away.
It's
but
not hitting any organs.
Yeah,
it's not
hitting anything
damage.
Vital. So the next night, or rather very early on the morning of October the 1st, the creature was seen again at 1 p.m., and it's seen by a man. He manages the town bank. His name is Clarence Dunn. He's also known as Peter Dunn. And Clarence had heard the rumors of this. Like we said, this...
So now it's starting to get around town.
Yeah.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah. This bat thing or whatever. But he says, well, that's stupid. There's no giant bats. It's
I
just...
agree.
It's just some guy in a costume or something. It's just a normal flesh and blood burglar. That's all it is. And, you know,
but he does think it's a burglar.
He does.
That's
yes.
Interesting. Okay.
The default position
is everyone thinks they're just someone trying to rob
everyone.
Them.
Everyone has a gun and everyone is liable to be burglared.
That seems
that's,
so weird.
That's the 1903 mindset.
Small city, a small yeah. town, like they know everyone.
Yeah. So maybe it's some outsider, an outside burglar.
Yes.
Now
we're getting to the bottom of this thing.
He says, if it's a burglar, where's the best place for a burglar to burgle? The bank, of course. You got to burgle the bank. And
that
so,
seems a little grandiose for a single burglar to figure out.
It's a bank in a town of 1,000 people.
Right, right. And it's also
1903. And it's 1903. So. How good was our security? And so he does. He sits there in the bank with his gun, just waiting.
I'm sorry. I'm imagining just a detective with a pipe or something being like, yes, well, the... Seems like the bank's been burgled.
The bank's been burgled.
We've got a burglar.
Burgled to the point of burglary, I would say. Yes.
But is this one man job? Was he be able to carry all this out at once?
All $50. That was a lot of money back then.
All right.
Yeah, so he's sitting there, right? He's defending his bank and the town's money and its livelihood. And he starts to... phase out a little bit. Nothing's happening. He's kind of bored. And it hits again 1 a.m. Now, here's the interesting thing. He doesn't see the light first. He doesn't see the creature first. What he hears is something that he described as wheezing, the strangling sound, as if someone is unable to breathe. And he gets up to investigate it. And the light... suddenly blares through the window of the bank, and he sees the outline of this creature, again, the long head and the wings, the bat-like wings. He sees it 7 or 8 feet tall, and he fires through his bank window at this creature that is just exuding light. This is a big deal. I mean, windows cost money. You're not just gonna fire through the window at nothing. And the interesting thing is, during the investigation of...
Depends on how big the window is.
Well, windows still cost money. And it's it's a storefront window.
Yeah, so storefront windows, those are going to be pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Large single sheet of glass, yeah, those are pricey.
Yeah, it's not going to be something you just do for no good reason. Now, after seeing this, it definitely makes Dunn... into a believer, one way or the other. But what he says, or what he thinks, is, well, I got to have killed it. The light goes off. I got to have killed it. I shot it at point-blank range. But he was so scared that he didn't want to go out and look for it alone. And so he waited a few hours until sun came up. And then he went outside to try to look for it. Didn't find the body itself, but he did find a three-toed track. Mm-hmm. In the ground outside, and he roused the whole town, and they all went all over the place looking for this creature. They couldn't find it. Dunn was said to have made plaster casts of the track, but unfortunately they were lost to history. Now, in interviews with the local residents who had heard the story of the monster secondhand, Chad Lewis, that author of that book again, he learned that Dunn was a pillar of the society. One resident stated, Peter Dunn was the boss. He ran the town. If he believed in the monster, then everyone did. Now, the next morning, again, this only happens in the evening time or the early morning. This time, it's not specified. But let's go ahead and say it's probably 1 a.m. because that's when the last three encounters took place.
Consistency, storytelling-wise. Yep.
The creature startled another individual who had stayed up late to guard his business. Now, this was Mr. O.V. White, who owned a hardware and a furniture store.
Okay, hold on. So he's afraid for his hardware and furniture.
Furniture is expensive.
I need a new couch.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I'm going to go.
Here's the situation. Burglary. There's a burglar in the town.
Yes.
You are a small business owner, and you're probably... not, I don't know, maybe you're doing fine, but it's a town of 1,000 people. How often do you really need to sell a new table? Probably not that often. Where was I? Right. Oh, no. I'm derailed again.
You're going to stay up.
You're going to stay up, and you're going to defend your furniture store, even if it's not the most likely target.
Well, I'm saying it seems like it's a tough job for, you know, one person to take a big old couch.
Well, I think that he's might be more worried about, A, the smaller things, or B, if there was cash in the store anywhere or anything like that.
Why not just take that home and put it in a safe?
These people are worried about their livelihood, Jason, and they have guns. They want to be awake with their guns. That's what this comes down to at a certain point.
I like my gun. I understand.
See? Now, Mr. O.V. White owned this hardware and furniture store. He was keeping watch on the second floor when he had dozed off. Suddenly, this telltale light startled him awake. He sees the creature about 15 feet away, perched on a telephone pole. Now, White fired through his open window, and what happened next is that a wave, a front of stank hit him right in the face like a train.
What you're telling me is that this creature, our visitor, just pooped itself.
Something like that. it was so bad that it practically paralyzed him. He was unable to move from there.
Oh, God.
Yep. So here's where it gets interesting. Up until now, right, these had been single people seeing the creature, one at a time. However, as soon as Mr. White fired his gun at the creature through the open window, another townsperson, one Sidney Gregg, who had stayed up late to make sure his store was safe from the burglar, heard the shot. He pokes his head out, essentially, to see what's going on, and he sees this creature climbing down the telephone pole with the light shining out of it.
Why would it climb down if it has wings?
So, that's a good question, because what he sees is the creature running, right? It's running on all fours, flapping its wings as if it's attempting to lift off, but it just can't. And then after a moment, it says, screw it, I'm just going
to
run.
It's running on all fours,
mm-hmm.
trying to take flight.
It
still has four limbs, right?
Yeah.
Not six.
No, okay. It doesn't have six. It runs, it tries to flap, doesn't work, runs, tries to flap, doesn't work, and then finally just runs from
that
there.
That makes more sense, because something that size would be really hard to
really heavy and really hard to get up, and we'll talk about that. But that's where potentially the creature was wounded, you know, and maybe it did get shot through the wing. It heads out of town towards an old abandoned coal mine. Now, I couldn't find the exact distance of the coal mine from the town, but Lewis, in an interview, Chad Lewis says that it's about 7 blocks outside of the town.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it's not far at all. No, that's the point he's making, is that it's pretty much right there. Now,
it's like, hey, kids, let's go play in the coal mine after school or something.
Let's not. Don't, if you're a child...
Not like,
don't go I play in like, coal mines.
I meant like
if you're an adult,
you know, like oh, nope. We're gonna go hang out at the coal mine, kind of a thing.
That's fair, I guess.
I don't know. I feel like the coal mine's probably the coolest happening thing going on in that town.
I really don't think so.
I hope not, but
it could be.
It's danger.
So it heads towards the old coal mine. That's the morning, early morning on the second. Okay.
Okay.
Now the next morning, there were no reports of creatures stalking the town or anything like that.
It's licking its wounds.
Licking its wounds. However, according to the papers, the Des Moines Daily News for October 3rd, they stated that early in the morning, there was heard a noise. And I'm just going to quote this. Quote, presently, the noise opened up again as though Satan and a regiment of imps were coming forth from battle.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. That is super cool imagery.
It's super cool imagery. It's super scary.
It's pretty frightening.
These are the sounds. These are the sounds coming out of the coal mine that night, and they are heard by men who are working a late night shift at a nearby factory. And these men are just absolutely freaking terrified. It sounds like the world is ending, and that ending is starting in the coal mine right outside of town. They pretty much abandon their posts. They're just all standing there staring.
Yeah, and, well, you gotta do something about this.
Yeah, they don't know what they're gonna do. And suddenly, still in the night, I checked. The moon was just a few days away from being full. It was like 93% visible or something like that. And in this moonlight, what they see is not one, but two creatures flying out of the mine and up into the sky.
Brood.
Yep, and then they shine their lights on, you know, all over the place, and then they fly off into the distance. Now, you had the one that, or presumably one of the ones that had been seen around town, which was 8 feet tall, and then the other one, though, was about 4 feet tall in comparison. The pair flew away from the mine and flew away from Van Meter. The factory workers saw the monsters leave, and they abandoned their work, and they rounded up everyone in town that they could, all of the able-bodied men with guns that they knew, which was everyone. Everyone has guns. And they formed a posse. We got a posse going.
I love it.
I love me a good posse. And the way that the newspaper describes this posse is it said that they consisted of enough men to constitute an amount of firepower that was enough to sink the Spanish fleet. So, probably not true there. That's probably an exaggeration.
Probably about 5 people.
Yeah, well, I don't know about 5. But it's, maybe I mean, 15. It's a good amount, yeah. You know. At the very least, a very good amount. I wasn't able to find any specific numbers there. But they all...
It was an impressive conjuring for such a small town.
Yes, yes. They all kind of barricade themselves. They camp out right outside the entrance to the old mine until right around 5:45 a.m., which, again, I looked up. It's 27 minutes before sunrise. So the sky's getting lighter. You could see things. Yeah. They then saw both of the creatures descending from out of the sky. All of the men opened fire immediately, and although no noises were made from the creatures or any indication was given that they were struck, that same smell that knocked O.V. White back a few nights before flooded over the men. So you get this idea that potentially this is a defense mechanism for them. Once they are actually hit, they secrete this terrible smell. Now, the posse of men then saw the creatures dive into the mine. They kept watch for a while, and then they barricaded the mouth of the mine to keep whatever the monsters were from coming out. The mine itself went about 257 feet into the earth. It was big enough to necessitate stables built underground for the mules.
Whoa.
Yep.
All right.
And they knew that it was a big place and not really a place you want to go monster hunting in.
What? Totally do.
Nope. I think it's easy for us to sit here like, oh, let's go do that. Let's go monster hunting. But if even half of what we're talking about happened at all, that's the scariest thing you've ever experienced.
Just the posse with a ton of guns that can sink ships. Well, it's terrible. It's terrifying enough.
Yeah. And you think about, well, you're in a mine, you've got a posse in a mine. Everyone's jumped up. Somebody's going to get shot. That doesn't need to get shot. It's exactly. Just going to happen. You know, and so the mine was officially paved over some years later. According to Lewis, you can go stand on the entrance to it and not even know that you're there, although more than a few residents confided in him that they had heard strange noises and seen things in the sky around that area that didn't seem quite right. That, then, is the end of the story of the Van Meter Visitor. What do you think? What do you think, Jason? What's
Jersey
your first
Devil
impression?
Had a really bad vacation, is what my first impression
it's
is.
Really not the worst idea. It, you do have, like, right, because the Jersey Devil has, like, a horse head, right? Head of a horse. This head is elongated, right? It has the leathery bat-like wings.
It's in the right time period.
The only thing is that the devil is often seen and described as standing bipedally, whereas the only time this creature, it does stand, but the only time we've seen it move, it crawls down on all fours, mm-hmm. as well as the devil.
But we had a three-toed track.
Yes, that is true. Well, that was probably its feet.
Yeah, probably its feet, but it's probably not the forelimbs. Because if you are looking at, like, bat-like wings, the only digit that they have on their forelimb is going to be their thumb.
Right.
The rest of their fingers are splayed out to the wing.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, I'm just I'm like saying.
Yeah, yeah, no, I dig it.
If we have, you know, multiple tracks or a track that's showing one thing but has an inconsistency with what we know currently with what is in the world.
Are we Are we comparing this to the Jersey Devil still? Where are we?
I don't know.
Okay. That's fair. Lost. And so, the devil also is a quadruped with wings. Right. It's not a biped with wings like this seems to be. So, yeah.
Otherwise, I know you have some ideas.
They're not necessarily my ideas.
You have
don't attribute this to me.
You have a collection of ideas.
Yes.
From others and maybe a little bit of inspiration from yourself anywhere in there. But personally, myself, I'm gonna take a jump here.
And if you say an owl,
no, it's not an owl.
I'll murder you.
I would say it's an alien.
I feel like you're doing this just to test me.
No, like seriously, this creature is not from Earth, and I've got some reasons to it.
Tell me, please. I'd really... Or do you want me to give mine first and then we talk? It's up to you.
I would like to hear a little bit more about what other evidence
everybody
that you might have.
Keep that on mind. If I know Jason Moitoso... If I know Jason Moitoso, he's going to say it's an alien and then he's going to give you some sort of disappointing letdown. So I'm going to buoy you up for the time being. So the question obviously comes back to what... was it? That's what we're talking about now. According to the authors of the book, there is more than enough evidence that something strange did in fact happen back in 1903. They point to these newspaper articles, the one we referenced in the Des Moines Daily News, as well as the fact that in the centennial book of the town, which would have been published in 1977 after the town had been incorporated for 100 years, the story is featured along with handwritten eyewitness accounts. Now, these form the backbone of the book, The Van Meter Visitor, but Lewis and his partners also spent time talking with people who were one generation removed from the events, who grew up on stories of the visitor, and while there's not a lot of evidence, the stories do pretty much jive together into the one we've told today. Now, Lewis himself claims that when he first visited Van Meter, he expected to make quick work of it, debunking it as a hoax and moving on to bigger and better things. But what he uncovered and put into this book made him a true believer. One of the cool things about this guy, and kind of what I hope that we're doing with this show in our own little way, is that this legend was on the edge of dying out. You know, it wasn't, other than the centennial book, which, you know.
Like those footprints, it's fading to history.
Fading to history, yes. Anyway, yes.
Yes.
But he comes in, he and his team come in, and now, I mean, Van Meter has a visitor festival every year, just like Point Pleasant has a Mothman festival. He takes this legend that was on the brink of dying and breathed life into it, which I think is fantastic. You know, people didn't want to give it any credence. Everybody who had seen the creature had died, and their children were pretty much gone too, but he worked really hard at keeping this alive. And all that, you know, but all that sentimental stuff aside, if we're going to take these reports seriously, we need to find a theory that explains all of the elements of this creature. And this is, of course, very hard to do, but there is one prevailing physical theory that I'm sure is going to cause Jason extreme internal pain. Pterodactyls. Real, live pterodactyls.
Okay. I'll hear you out. What do you got for me?
This is something I knew about this, right? I knew that people believed that pterodactyls still existed.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it primarily when I looked up in preparation for our Jason special on dragons, I looked up real dragon sightings, and I found a lot of people talking about pterodactyls and pterodons,
yeah,
as if they were dragons and if they had existed and they were real. There have been stories of pterodactyl sightings, I mean, redocumented again since the 1600s all the way up till 2017. And I'm sure once we give 2018 a few more days, we'll have another one in 2018 as well. Now, some of the most famous sightings come from between 1982 and 1983. They occurred in an area known as the Pennines, which are a range of hills and mountains in northern England.
Okay.
The first sighting took place on September 12, 1982. A man by the name of William Green reported that he saw a giant gray creature with leathery, bat-like wings and a wingspan of 6 feet in the Shipley Glen Woods. He claimed that just looking at the creature, it just felt wrong. It just didn't... It's not the same feeling you get when you look at normal wildlife or normal animals or anything.
Yeah.
You just felt a little weird. Now, 3 days later, a woman named Jean Schofield saw the same creature in the town of...
Yaden,
in West Yorkshire. Jean Schofield saw the same creature in the town of Yaden in West Yorkshire, which was about 5 miles away. Now, she claimed that its wingspan may have been as large as 10 feet, and that it was surrounded by a flock of rooks. Now, the group was traveling towards the Leeds airport, and she was worried that it might even smack into an airplane and cause some sort of an accident. But as far as I can tell, she didn't call anybody about it, so really, what are you doing?
It's like, yeah. Hopefully you don't hit a plane.
So be it. Whatever.
Keep walking away.
Now, around this time, these two sightings made it to the press, who understandably had a field day. However, far from being a subject of public ridicule, as most cryptozoology stories are, this actually prompted more people to come forward and say, I saw this thing too. One of which was a man named Richard Pollock, who was out walking his dog, and suddenly he heard what he described as a screaming sound, and saw, diving at them with frightening speed, something he described as extremely large, with a face that was a cross between a crocodile and a bat, with the same leathery wings and a reptilian air about it. Like the original sighting, he claimed... Oh, I don't know if I said this. In the original sighting... he said that it flew haphazardly. It flew off kilter. It didn't seem natural.
Okay.
And this individual says the same thing. It's flying very erratic, as if it's not something that comes easy to the creature. Now, he claims that it came to roost on top of a building before flying off, ultimately. And there were reports of TV antennas being dented or being bent and damage being inflicted to rooftops and telephone poles during this time. The creature then disappeared and reappeared a year later in Thackeley. The people there claim that they claim the same sort of labored flight followed by diving or gliding in order to actually achieve flying. Interesting. Lee, even though we're not super certain, I did find in 2008, I found a few different papers that were published that said this may be how a creature as big and heavy as a pterodactyl could fly, would be more of a gliding and a soaring instead of an actual flapping of wings.
Large birds now fly is essentially they soar. They don't actually really flap. They ride air currents.
Yeah, the air currents. That's what it was. Nice.
He's got
his dinosaur knowledge on. I love it.
That was about birds, but basically dinosaurs.
Yeah, birds are dinos.
Yeah, dude.
Right?
That's the best part about them.
Now, there is another longer-running tradition of living pterosaurs in Papua New Guinea, where they are referred to by the natives as ropen, which translates to demon flyer. Now, according to some sources, the ropen was popularized in non-native tradition back in 1935 by the biologist... Well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to go. By the biologist and entomologist Evelyn Chessman. Now, she mentioned the phenomena in her book, The Two Roads of Papua. Although she acknowledged that the phenomena didn't seem to have a source in any human agency, she didn't do much to explain what they were and what they are at their very core, are just lights in the sky.
Yep.
They just hang there. Sometimes they move around kind of weird. They're just lights.
They're UFOs.
They're UFOs at their very core. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
Now, they're observed and unexplained in this area of Papua New Guinea. These lights transition from just being unidentified lights in the sky into being something more reptilian in 1944. It was then that a man by the name of Dwayne Hodgkinson was stationed near Finchafen during the Second World War. Now, one day in August around noon, he was walking in the forest that he was stationed near when he saw, or when he heard noises coming from the underbrush. It was a crashing and a snapping and a breaking, and he saw something circling out of the brush into the air. He estimated it had to have at least a 20-foot wingspan with gray bat-like wings, a beak, and a very long tail. Now, ever since then, reports have come in every year of flying pterosaurs in Papua New Guinea. There was even a story in 1995 of a ropin carrying a man off and devouring him in the trees. And in 2004, a cryptozoologist named Jonathan Whitcomb made an expedition to the Umboy Island in New Guinea, where he found 17 individuals that he deemed to be credible witnesses and interviewed them all concerning their experiences with the ropin. The details were fairly consistent throughout and enough to convince Whitcomb that these creatures were not merely misidentified from some other known species. Instead, he believed that the ropin were directly descended from the pterosaurs of time gone by, with one big difference. And that difference is why we're talking about this at all. It is because, like we said, the ropin are, in and of themselves, simply lights. Now, this is, the ropin themselves exist. The pterosaur is another way of explaining the ropin. But people say, including these 17 witnesses, eyewitnesses that Whitcomb found, the researchers and dozens of eyewitnesses say that the ropin has a natural bioluminescence to it, not unlike our good friend the Van Meter Visitor. These things look like pterodactyls, and they emit light. This is a good theory for the Van Meter Visitor, in and of itself. Jason, I know, has some things to say. But the only thing that it doesn't do is explain how this thing can get shot. Because even if you're a dinosaur, you get shot, you're still going to get deaded. You're going to die.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where that inconsistencies arose. We had a man that was shot at point blank, probably towards vital organs, with 5 rounds and didn't do a thing to it, versus people that have shot it at a distance that have made to have seen an impact. So what is it? Is it just heavily armored around its torso and its wings are just not there? Like, what about it? Because it's an in and out. It's doing this, but it's doing that as well at the same time.
Yes.
And they don't agree with each other.
There are a lot of theories. I do have a favorite.
Okay.
But some people say that it is something very much like Mothman, where it's what, you know, John Keel, Jacques Vallée would refer to it as an ultra-terrestrial. It's something, some sort of creature that exists in and out of this dimension, which is what one of the co-authors of The Van Meter Visitor, his name's Kevin Nelson, seems to potentially think it as a possibility. There's this amazing image of the visitor that was sketched for the book by Kevin Nelson, and he puts in the chest of it, he puts a illustration of a tesseract, you know, a four-dimensional cube in a three-dimensional space. And I actually reached out to him because it's a super cool drawing. I reached out to Kevin Nelson and Chad Lewis, who put me in touch with Kevin Nelson, if people had actually seen that on the creature itself or if that was just some artistic license. He said, yeah, it's more of artistic license just to illustrate the potential multidimensionality of the creature itself. So that's one big one, is that it's an ultra-terrestrial, something like Mothman would be.
Mothman's an owl, though.
Okay, so shut up. And secondly, he's not. And thirdly, though, my favorite theory, again, we have to find something that explains all of this. So I'm going to say it is a pterosaur or a pterodactyl. Okay. I'm going to say that it is bioluminescent. And I'm going to say that it's a ghost. It's the ghost of a bioluminescent pterosaur. Here's the thing, okay? This is what we don't talk about. This is the side of things that we don't really cover in this show that much, is when we pile on paranormal and paranormal. You know, living dinosaurs is one thing.
Paranormal square.
Yes.
Is what you're telling
it's parasquare. Yes. Parasquare. We're going to call it that. It's parasquared. So this theory comes up multiple times in multiple places. For instance, one of the big ones is Nessie, right? Nessie is not. Nessie exists. Nessie cannot be found, and Nessie cannot be, doesn't have any logical reason for being in Loch Ness, because she is not a living plesiosaur. She is the ghost of a plesiosaur. Yes. And Sean Lennon, which is John Lennon's son, he has a band called the Ghost of a Sabretooth Tiger. So I don't know what that has to do with anything, but it's pretty dope.
I'm cool with that.
So that's it's not necessarily the thing I think is most likely, but that's probably my favorite theory, is that it's a ghost of a pterosaur.
That's a lot of, sure, that could happen.
Yeah.
Involved in that. So.
Sure.
All right.
As for me personally, I think it was just a normal cryptid, I'm going to say.
A normal? Yeah. Your run-of-the-mill cryptid.
Just your run-of-the-mill cryptid.
Those darn fangled cryptids,
I think,
man.
It was. And, you know, that's what people assumed, is that it was a normal, as yet undiscovered
creature. Of some sort.
Which is the definition of a cryptid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and honestly, that's, I don't feel the multidimensional as much, other than the fact that it gets shot, it doesn't respond. That's the only thing that we have a problem with. But if you've got a blinding light in your face, you could just be missing. You know, it, when you're at close
but
lane,
he's at point blank.
Yeah,
it's tougher to miss.
True, I understand, but that's why
the
like I said, the only thing that works in that case is ghost dinosaur, which I'm just not comfortable saying that's what it was. So, but tell me, what do you think?
Okay, so this is the fun part.
Okay,
I looked into a bit for the roping, and because it sounded interesting, and I came across something similar when I was looking up dragons.
Okay,
so the roping is a extremely weird creature. For the most part, for most of the descriptions that I've seen, is that it usually has, like, again, a wingspan of like 20 feet across to 23, mm-hmm. And a tail matching that in size. Now, that alone, based off of everything I did for the dragon episode, makes me think, hold on, wait a minute. How is that possible to fly? Because it shouldn't be. That's a lot of drag out of a tail that size.
Yeah.
And a lot of small pterodons had very, very teeny tiny tails, very rigid tails that did not require a lot of muscle mass as a way to get around that. Once we got into the bigger mid-sized pterodons, something that would be you know, like a 6-foot wingspan, their tails were almost, they're very recessed or non-existent, all the way up to Quetzalcoatl again, which is the big old boy on the very, very top.
My boy.
Yeah. So from there as well, the ropin has a really interesting diet. It seems to dig up dead corpses.
Huh.
So
I didn't find that.
Yeah, the ropin apparently likes to eat on decaying flesh. Now, that in itself isn't necessarily unnatural. When we think about predatory birds, we think also about scavengers as well. Now, the weird thing is that the ropin doesn't have really any hind legs whatsoever for most descriptions. And if you're a ground, or at least feeding from the ground, have long legs, or legs really much of anything to stand on. Because when we look at, again, Quetzalcoatl, which would have a similar diet to it, it actually had longer legs. And we look at ground-dwelling birds now, they do have longer legs with very flat feet so that they can walk around, and they have their bills actually help them reach the ground level. Same thing Quetzalcoatl, because it is such a massively tall creature, while it's standing, their bill actually does a lot of the work for them to get lower.
Okay.
So the ropin doesn't have any hind legs. I'm kind of working from back to forward. Has an extremely long tail that doesn't really make sense for most physics of flight.
Yeah.
Has very, very small legs or almost non-existent legs, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense for its diet or flight in general, because, again, with research for dragons, pterodons, from what we believe now, did essentially a quadruped leap to launch them into the air.
Oh.
To take flight. So if you don't have hind legs to help propel you upward, especially something that incredibly massive, it's going to be tough for them to take
flight. It's a non-starter.
Right. Like, how is it going to get up if it's that big of a creature? We're talking, again, a 20-foot wingspan. That thing's huge. Yeah. Now, the rest of it doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. So, again, it has a tail, and it also has been described having, like, the diamond-shaped tail, which is common for pterodons, especially very, very small pterodons. And unfortunately, those fossils were very common and very famous in the mid-1900s. From there, if we go farther up on its body, it has little claws, supposedly, and then its head is quite small, but it has a large crest, like a pterodon. Now, we have, since that period of time, found small pterosaurs that do have crests and tails, but it doesn't have a crest similar to that of a pterodon, which is the very well-known kind of flagship pterodactyl,
right,
with a very, very large crest, and that swoops into their bill.
Yeah.
So all these things are really kind of a mishmash of different pterodons that we had in the past.
Okay.
And also it's described as being reptilian. Well, but in the past decade, we've discovered that pterodons, at least most of them, I can't say all of them because, well, we don't know for certain.
Right.
But there's been a lot of hard evidence that shows that pterodons had filaments covering almost their entire bodies.
Okay.
So, hair-like features.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily going to be reptilian, and those naked features that we kind of think of pterodons now, and that we get from things like Jurassic Park. Not the case. They're actually really furry. They're fuzzy little guys.
So what if it was the mental projection of a pterodon?
I'm
a tulpa.
Let me keep going.
Okay,
let me keep going here. And as far as the bioluminescence, this one is really the nail in the coffin.
Yeah,
for me.
Tell me about that.
We have not observed any evidence showing of a terrestrial vertebrate having any sort of bioluminescence.
Well, then.
we have
I don't know how to respond to that.
We have marine vertebrates, of course.
Right.
Some fish do. And also invertebrates do as well, but not an
actual
vertebrate. Yeah, none whatsoever. I'm not even talking about birds, but
right,
anything with a hard spine that walks on land or flies in the air. We just haven't seen any record of that whatsoever. Now, what's also kind of fun is the fact that pterodons, the one with the big crest that we're talking about,
uh-huh,
they died out 14 million years before the mass extinction of the dinosaurs.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So the ropin is an interesting idea.
Right.
I think it's an airplane.
You think it's airplanes?
I That's think it's a small airplane. If we look at the wingspan here, we're talking 20 to 23 feet. That's very typical for a small wingspan of a plane. And also, what other flying object has a tail that's roughly the same size as the wingspan?
But an airplane is an airplane.
An airplane has
lights.
That's
my only thing there. Right.
Right? Also, this physical description of the ropin wasn't around before Western influence.
Right.
On Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I'm not saying that the people of Papua New Guinea are dumb in any sense of the word, but their culture is a lot farther back, technology-wise, than Western civilization is, because Papua New Guinea is a very dense forest.
Yeah.
There's a few different theories of why Papua New Guinea didn't grow and become, because it's been inhabited by people for a very, very, very long time. But there are several different ideas of why it hasn't become like a real civilization. It's why it's so still very, very tribal in a lot of aspects. Agriculture is the big one.
Okay.
Papua New Guinea doesn't really have any beasts of burden.
Yeah.
So it's tough to produce enough food to where you're not living a hunter-gatherer lifestyle.
Yeah.
So that you can have other jobs being created, other occupations for people to start doing. So without being able to propagate with agriculture in that sense, they don't have necessarily the technology that we would have. especially if we're talking turn of the 1900s, early 1900s to 30s, and even to the 40s. A lot of this was still very new technology for mm-hmm. them, and it probably came as a pretty big culture shock to them.
That's fair.
So.
I don't know enough about the Ropins.
Right. And again, like some of these other sightings that you had, this big bat-like creature or reptilian-like creature, from our recent findings, that's just outdated.
Right.
The unfortunate thing is a lot of sightings of these big reptilian creatures is what we knew from pop culture at the time.
Right.
Now we've discovered more and more that, well, they weren't really like that. In fact, none of them really had these like giant pointy bat wings, but they're mm-hmm. actually more rounded off wings mm-hmm. that had air sacs in them.
Yeah.
To actually help them fly. And, yeah. and they're all filament covered as well. So it's interesting to look at a cryptid that came out, that was created essentially or existed 100 years ago.
Right.
Showing these features that we categorically know are incorrect now.
Right.
Same thing with Loch Ness, is that, well, that swan neck position that she always has.
Yeah. Impossible.
That's impossible because yeah. of newer findings.
Yeah.
So, for me, the Ropin is completely out of the question. It's not what we think it is. Also, I learned that Jonathan Whitcomb is a young Earth theorist yeah. as well.
So that's the thing about the Ropin. Also
throws me off a bit. Yeah.
That's the we're not here to tread on anybody's beliefs whatsoever, but
we just don't Whitcomb, have the hard evidence for it.
Yeah, Whitcomb uses the Ropin as a way of proving his worldview, which when you have something that hinges, when you're hinging your whole worldview on something, it's impossible to be objective about it, right? So, yeah. yes, I wasn't going to bring it up if you weren't going to bring it up, but that's okay. Yeah, I just briefly brushed up against the Ropin, and I figured, this would be something fun to talk about. So I did read an article by the Smithsonian about the Ropin, so that's good. Ooh. We'll link to that. But, yeah, they're interesting. So Jason Moitoso doesn't believe in the Ropin, which is fair, I would say. Yeah. But what does Jason Moitoso think about the Van Meter Visitor, though?
So if the Van Meter Visitor is the obnoxious cousin of both the Jersey Devil and the Ropin, I don't feel confident with saying that this thing's a real being. Not at least from our Earth. Because, again, like I said, bioluminescence, not a thing for us.
So
that shiny horn he has on the top of his head doesn't fall within that ruling. Also, we don't have anything leading up to saying that this thing is existent in, like, our fossil record. That's where I lean towards. It's not of this world.
So, in typical Jason Moitoso talk, you say it's an alien, but you don't actually believe it's real, and therefore you don't believe in aliens, do you?
I believe it was a fabrication.
All right, that's fair. You think it was a fabrication?
Of some sort or another. Okay. I think at least some parts of the story might have been fabricated. So yes, in typical me manner, I think it's an alien because I don't think it's real.
All right. God, that's disappointing. I knew that's what was coming, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, well,
you know better by now. It's fun.
It is fun. It's a good story. I like it. It's one of my favorite stories. I think it's
really weird that it would have a glowing horn, or at least not even a glowing, it's like a shining horn. Because originally I'm like, well, maybe you said that to like navigate the air. And then it's like, well, to evolve a glowing, a shining horn,
right,
it's so much trickier than doing what bats do.
Yeah.
You can always already make sounds. Yeah. Like, why not just have better hearing?
Yeah. I kind of took it that the light coming out of the horn was, because even Chad Lewis says, yeah, things were probably exaggerated.
Yeah.
But there was something. I would take it that the light coming out of the horn is probably exaggerated. But the bioluminescence, I don't know. The light in general, I don't know. It's more plausible to me, regardless of the complete lack of scientific evidence. So, do you think it was a hoax? Do you think somebody dressed up like this? Do you think it was a crane?
I don't think it was a crane.
Okay.
I don't think it's a crane because I just don't see a point of a bird being up at 1 a.m. in the morning and doing things like that.
Right.
Or a bird, I don't know, living in a cave. That doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it could have been some sort of hoax that got exaggerated.
Right.
You know, that's easier to fabricate.
All right.
That being said, it is a little bit tougher to convince, you know, a posse of men to say that they all did all this stuff.
Right.
Unless, I don't know, they're really, really bored in this town.
It is a town of 1,000 people. It is probably the most exciting thing to ever happen there.
There are just so many different things, and we have so much lack of physical evidence whatsoever that you can't really pin it down to, oh, this was a bird. Oh, this was a bat. This was something else. This was a burglar, actually, to really be. So it's so all over the place that it's hard to pin it down into one area.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think something happened, for sure. I don't know what exactly.
Don't get me wrong. I think something occurred. I just don't think it was this.
Right. That's fair. I don't think it's the Ropin. I don't know what I think about the Ropin, but...
The Ropin's an airplane.
And it also could be that it's a... you know, you make up the point, not necessarily about the Van Meter visitor, but about the Ropin, about the sightings in England in the 1980s. These things are not what they seem. They're what we think they are, but they're not what they actually were, right? So it could be some sort of weird, if we want to get parasquared again, it can be a psychic manifestation, you know, something in the general unconsciousness.
I think I'd rather take the leap that a pterodon survived and lived for another 50 million years.
I'm trying to explain all the facts.
All right.
And that's how I can do it. But anyway,
and then it got waxed, which is why it doesn't have any filaments on his body anymore.
Yes, exactly. See, that's what I'm saying. It has to explain everything. So, and with this one, there's just nothing. There's nothing that explains everything unless, A, it is truly something that
bat unicorn
was never seen before and never seen again. That's A. Or B, it was hoaxed one way or the other. The big one for me against the hoax is just the fact that, because all of the sightings in town, right, could all be, really, honestly, most of them could be like a dummy. It's not seen moving that much. It pretty much stands. It does climb down. It does jump. But the big one for me is when they see it, like, come out of the mine and go up into the air. But then from there... I guess it could be some other misidentification. I don't know,
man.
It's an interesting one.
It's a really interesting story.
It's like the Dover Demon. It does its own thing, you know?
When you have such extraordinary claims, you need to back it up with really extraordinary evidence as
well. If you live in Iowa, Van Meter, anywhere near it, and you know where these plaster footprints are, find them. Let us know. We'll give you some form of payment.
Indiana Jones it.
Indiana Jones it. We'll give you something.
Some of them again.
But yeah, it's a great story. Something happened, and I like it. I'm glad we did it. This one was one of the ones to that's been on the list since we started the show, and I figured, okay, let's do it for 2018. So we did it. That's the Van Meter Visitor. How do you feel?
Like I need a vacation myself.
Right?
Yeah.
So again,
3 day.
Remember, we're not going to be here next week. We are taking a little bit of time off.
Oh,
so.
Hey. And that's smart. Look at that.
But we will return the week after that. Who knows with what? Probably an alien case. I really want to do an alien of some kind.
We just did one.
Oh. It has been. I mean, people say that this thing is an alien. They say it's Satan himself. They say it's demons. They say it's a mountain gorilla or something like it. I don't know.
I thought Satan had two horns.
A giant. Wow. Satan doesn't actually have any horns.
Oh, well then, what are we to do? What are we to do?
Okay. Yeah, so we'll be back, not next week, but the week after. We're going to take some time off. But before we go, we want to just thank everybody who has left us a review in the last few weeks. We have 3 new reviews. So we want to thank LTLATL. We want to thank Random Couch Potato. Yes. And we want to thank Slipstream 85. And it's even... right?
Thank you, folks.
Is that it?
Yeah. Sure? I don't know. You have the list, not me.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, and it's my favorite one out of these was actually by Random Couch Potato. And the reason why is he says, we sound like an American baby MU. MU is Mysterious Universe, which is probably one of the biggest paranormal podcasts in the world. It's
dope.
Yeah, it's super dope. They're so good. You should go listen to it if you haven't already. But he says, you guys remind me of an American baby MU. Baby, or American baby version of Mysterious Universe, baby is an age of podcast, don't be weird. Keep it up, my dudes. So that's what we'll do. 2018, we're going to keep it up. And then we also want to thank, we got two new patrons in the last two weeks. Man. So we want to thank, Kisses 90.
Woo!
Kisses 90. And then we want to thank Lindsay Mickey.
Woo, Lindsay!
Thank you so much, guys. That Patreon support really helps keep the show going. Another great way of keeping the show going, keeping the show free for ages to come, is to check out our sponsor this week. Our sponsor this week is ZipRecruiter. Don't forget to go to ZipRecruiter.com/alone to get your free use of the service. Other than that, write a review if you can. You know, take a look at the Patreon if you're interested in supporting the show that way. This month, we're going to find some time to do a bonus episode. We took last month off from the bonus episode because it's crazy, but we'll be back on it this month with more archaic UFO sightings.
Yes.
You can figure all that out. You can take a look there. That's patreon.com/notalonepodcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook just by searching Not Alone Podcast. We have a Facebook group as well for people who want to talk about the show or just post spooky paranormal things, stuff to keep me up at night. People have been posting a lot of videos of big wolves and calling them skinwalkers.
Yeah.
And it's really hurting my feelings.
I still think they're just wolves.
They may just be wolves, but they are very big and scary still. And that is,
I think we don't appreciate the size of wolves.
That's fair. That the name of that group, which you can find through Facebook.
Remember, we are not alone.
Yeah, but then it's got like a subtitle. Is Remember, We Are Not Alone, a Community for the Strange. So feel free, search for that, add that. We'd love to have you there. Yeah, other than that, we won't see you next week, but we'll see you the week after. We love you. We think you're great. That's true. We won't see you next week or any other week ever because this is an audible audio medium. Who did it? Rob did it last week.
Yeah, he did. Who did it the week before?
I think it was me.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Remember, whether you're protecting everything you hold dear or lighting up the night sky, you are
not alone.